This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI4People.
Wer die Finanzen eines Unternehmens managt, ist oft beschäftigt. Sehr beschäftigt. Sehr, sehr, sehr beschäftigt. Konto ist das All-in-One-Geschäftskonto, um Ihr Unternehmen zu managen. Egal, ob Sie selbstständig sind oder die Finanzabteilung eines mittleren Unternehmens leiten. Mit Konto erledigen Sie alles in einer App. Geschäftskonto schnell eröffnen? Erledigt. Ausgabenmanagement? Erledigt. Buchhaltung und Reporting? Erledigt. Konto. Das Geschäftskonto, das zu Ihnen passt.
BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello, welcome to this Moneybox podcast. Fraud is still massive, new figures reveal, so why do 30 banking firms want to slash the amount they repay their customers who fall victim? Energy bills will fall again for the summer, but they'll be up again in time for the winter. And red stripe, black stripe, or no stripe at all? Why people on tax credits are getting confused over official letters about their benefits. But first, almost everyone seems to have been taken by surprise by the Prime Minister's announcement that he'd asked the King to dissolve Parliament and would call a general election on July the 4th, abandoning much of his parliamentary business. Protection for tenants in England and Wales from arbitrary eviction, just one casualty of the announcement, as the Renters Reform Bill has been lost. So what are the financial issues that you'll be considering when you decide how to cast your first vote for a new Parliament since December 2019? Since then, we've had the pandemic, the war in Ukraine, record energy bills and the highest rate of inflation for 40 years, creating a cost of living crisis which has left many people poorer. Research shows the economy and inflation are two big issues on our minds. Moneybox went to Cheshire and asked people in Northwich what the key money issues for them are in the election campaign.
To be honest, I think it's tough for everyone at the moment. Everything has gone up, salaries are still the same, so I think everyone is suffering at the moment. Cutting taxes, that would definitely make a difference. Cutting taxes, cutting VAT taxes, that would be a big help to people.
I've got a daughter who's in her 30s with children. Very difficult for her at the moment. So, yeah, I'm very well aware of the pressure on cost of living. She's just coming to the end of a fixed-term mortgage rate, so she's quite panicky about what that's going to mean, because it's going to increase quite substantially.
There's just been a lot of people struggling for a long time. I think the election is absolutely needed. We've been waiting for it for a while. Hopefully things will change and people will be better off.
When you think of your finances, what's the biggest issue?
I've not got any children and I've got my own house with a mortgage and stuff, and me and my partner agreed together and we share the things, so it's fine. I'm not struggling too much, but I think it's just people in general are struggling to afford the things that they like and they want to do for themselves.
Nothing goes up like 50p anymore, does it? I mean, a coffee and everything goes up like 55%, 70%. What happened to 10p? And we're just mad.
People in Northwich talking to Neil Morrow. Well, do you share their worries? Let us know what money issues you're concerned about as you decide how to vote on July the 4th. We'll reflect those concerns on Moneybox over the next few weeks. Email moneybox@bbc.co.uk. Laura Souter is with us. She's Director of Personal Finance at the investment platform AJ Bell. Laura Souter, lots of those people concerned about the cost of living, inflation. Is that the top issue, do you think, for the next few weeks?
I definitely think that that is going to be what all parties are talking about and trying to appeal to. I mean, we've seen inflation fall, but people aren't really feeling the benefit of that at the moment. So I think as all parties are on the campaign trail, they'll be talking about things like inflation, energy bills, cost of living, personal taxes, to really help households feel a bit better off.
What do you expect to see on mortgages? What, there was concern about a mortgage for her daughter from one of those ladies there. Interest rates held, maybe for longer than we expected. People are wondering, what if they need to remortgage or indeed hope to buy? What can they expect, you think?
Yeah, and I think the housing market is always a key one, isn't it? Because we are a nation obsessed with owning property. And I think, like you say, existing homeowners will be looking for policies that are going to continue to push inflation down, which then obviously means the likelihood of interest rate cuts will come sooner. Firstly, first-time buyers are going to be wanting more support to help them get on the housing ladder because rising house prices and rising mortgage rates are making it much harder for those first-time buyers.
Yes,
and it wouldn't be an election if we didn't have stamp duty rumours about those being cut, so I'm sure we'll see those.
I'm sure we will, but of course, as we've heard from the IFS this morning, there's not really much room for giveaways there at the moment. Now, the state pension, that's risen above inflation since 2019 due to the so-called triple lock. Is the triple lock guaranteed to carry on?
Pretty much as anything can be guaranteed in this election process. Yeah, parties have come out and said that they're going to commit to the triple lock. And so that will be continuing that policy.
Yeah, so the state pension rising with prices, earnings or 2.5%, whichever is the higher. And talking of pensions, everyone in work earning more than £10,000 a year is now automatically enrolled into a pension at work, seen as a great success. All parties support it. But there are changes that are being suggested. What will the next government have to decide?
Yeah, so this is probably something that we're not going to necessarily hear about in manifestos, but you're right, it's a task that the next government is going to have to tackle. There were some recommendations made back in 2017 of how to change the auto-enrolment system that haven't been adopted yet, and that's something that they're going to have to address. And among those changes was lowering the age at which you're eligible for auto-enrolment and also making it so that people are eligible whatever they earn. They also need to look at the contribution rates, because while auto-enrolment means lots more people have pensions, we know that they're still not saving enough for a decent retirement. And so hiking those contribution rates is on the agenda.
Yes. And of course, the good thing about that is it's businesses that spend the money rather than the government, isn't it? Now, in the past few weeks, further change has come to help working parents with childcare. Do you think that's going to carry on if there's a change of government or if the present government is re-elected?
Yeah, I'd imagine that policy, so for additional funded hours being extended to younger children, I would envisage that would still come in, and parties have been supportive of it. I think actually what we might see is more support on childcare. I think this might become one of the kind of key battlegrounds of the election as different parties commit to more support for parents, because rising childcare costs are obviously a huge part of their budget.
Yes, and just very briefly, tax changes. There was a call for tax changes from Northwich. Do you think there'll be any change in frozen allowances? That's a very expensive move, isn't it? Very brief.
It is. And I think that, as you pointed out, and as the IFS have pointed out, there's not that much money to work with. So what we might see is promises to reduce taxes on national insurance in the future rather than immediately.
Laura Souter, thanks. And as the parties clarify their plans, we will, of course, come back to these topics. And if you've been shouting at the radio, as I know you do, yes or no, or what about that? As I said, please email moneybox@bbc.co.uk and we'll reflect your thoughts and questions in the next few weeks. New figures this week revealed that in 2023, a record number of people lost hundreds of millions of pounds to thieves who tricked them, manipulated them, and then drained their bank accounts. The slightly better news in these figures from UK Finance, which represents the banks, is that more of them got their money back. Dan Whitworth's been combing through the report. Dan.
Well, the headline number here, Paul, is £459 million. That's how much criminals stole from nearly a quarter of a million victims through authorised payment fraud. That's essentially when victims themselves are tricked into sending money to accounts controlled by thieves. Now, although we know fraud is by far and away the most common crime in the UK, that number's actually down 5% on the previous year. The number of victims, though, that's up by 12% to 232,000 victims.
Yeah, so what's behind those changing numbers?
Well, in terms of the amount of money being stolen coming down slightly, well, investment scams, which of course tend to involve large amounts of money, they're slightly down. Also, impersonation scams, criminals pretending to be bank or police or HMRC, well, they're down considerably. Now, hopefully, That indicates the public are becoming more alert to scams. But the big increase in the number of victims, Paul, well, that's largely driven by a sharp rise in romance and purchase scams, the latter being when victims are tricked into buying things online that never turn up. That tends to be high-volume, lower-value scams.
And what about refunds? We know most big high street banks are signed up to a voluntary code to refund most innocent victims of fraud. Have those amounts changed?
Well, slight improvement there, up just 3% at around 62% of all the money stolen this way being returned to victims by banks. Now, the idea of that reimbursement being that if banks are held liable for fraud losses, well, then they'll spend more improving security, upping their game and trying to stop fraud happening in the first place. Problem with all these numbers, though, Paul, as you and I know, they are just that. They are just numbers. They don't tell the stories of the innocent victims here. And we hear from a lot of them on Moneybox, and reports like this can never do them justice. Because for every victim, the emotional and financial impact is huge. Kate, her husband Gary, and their two sons had nearly £60,000 stolen a few months ago, money which has not been refunded by their banks.
Emotionally and mentally, it was absolutely horrendous. You feel completely violated. Do you know what? I remember about 12 years ago, we were burgled. That was a big deal. But at least then you could see how the burglars got into your home and you could take steps to make things good again. This is completely different. We feel angry, we feel humiliated, we feel absolutely devastated. We are just horrified by the whole thing. It's a roller coaster of the most ghastly, awful, awful emotions.
Now, Paul, as you know, there are new regulations being put in place by Watchdog, the payment systems regulator, due in October, which will give victims like Kate far more protection. Nearly all regular domestic transfers will be covered. Victims will be refunded in the vast majority of cases, and the limit on the amount that can be refunded will be £415,000. That's the same amount the Financial Ombudsman can award. Now, if Kate and Gary had had their money stolen when these new regulations were enforced, all their money would almost certainly have been refunded. These regulations won't help them, but we will be following their case and we'll let you know what happens.
Thanks, Dan. Well, I'm joined now by Ricardo Tordera from the Payments Association. That's an industry membership body made up of banks and many other smaller payment firms that will, for the first time, be subject to those stronger rules from October. Ricardo Tordera, you've been lobbying the regulator and Treasury ministers to weaken those protections, reducing that limit that Dan mentioned from 415,000 to just 30,000. Why?
Thank you very much, Paul, for inviting me here. And I just want to say that we are here to protect consumers, not to lower the threshold. The lowering the threshold is a necessary measure to protect the industry in a proportionate way. We are seeing from data that 95% of the scams are covered on a threshold of £10,000, right? £10,000. So if we have that money for protecting consumers, like £30,000 is much more than what you see being the average. 95% will go on a mandatory reimbursement. What we are contesting is not the reimbursement, is the mandatory procedure. Because mandatory means that automatically people will be refunded. But for such higher amount of money, the mandatory reimbursement will not work. Because there's a need to ensure that, you know, every party have their own say.
But you say it won't work. Why not? I mean, do you really think people like Kate, who we just heard from, deserves to lose half her money?
Absolutely not. I think that
Kate would under your plan.
No, because the £30,000 protect the mandatory part, but every other case will be judged by a dispute system that will decide who is right, who is not right. I'm confident that Kate will get her money back.
Right. You say 30,000, you say it will affect 95%, it won't affect 95%. 5% will be affected. That's over 11,000 people. That's a lot of people losing a lot of money, isn't it?
I don't think they will lose their money, because I think that they will become more educated and they will be more aware of where the scammers and the fraudsters operate. Let's not forget that the fraudsters...
Sorry to interrupt you, but that's not happened for years, have it? I mean, we've been telling people, you know, put down the phone, don't take cold calls. The trouble is, your members, the small ones and the big ones, are just not protecting people. They're letting criminals open accounts, they're not spotting large transfers, and they're not acting quickly enough to get the money back. And the whole purpose of having that big limit, or £415,000, is to make them get their act together, which they haven't done for years.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I'm not talking on behalf of the high street banks, but the smaller players,
but
and there are different regulations in place.
The 30,000 would apply to them.
The 30,000 will be applying. It's a mandatory request.
If you get your way.
But there is also the non-mandatory bit, which is where it will cover everyone. You know, 95% with the mandatory, 5% with the dispute system. That's how... look at credit cards, for example. There's a chargeback system that works very well. No one contests that, and that's on the 30 grand base. So for other kind of frauds that are higher, you know, we're talking about a lot of money. So we need to ensure that there is proper police reporting, that there is proper intervention from the social media platform where the scam lives. You know, we need a big table. We need the new government to look at this from an industry ecosystem perspective that protects consumers. We're here to consumers are our customers. And we want to beat the fraudsters. We want to protect customers from the fraud. And we need the fraud to be prevented from happening in the first place. But just mandating reimbursement is something that happens afterwards, not before. But we need to act before.
But the smaller firms that you say have sent this letter asking for 30,000 limit, they are the ones who are defrauded the most, aren't they? Looking at the figures from the Payment Services Regulator, vast amounts of fraud are done on those, far more than the big banks, because the big banks have been taking measures, whereas the smaller ones haven't, because they're not part of this code of practice.
Well, you know, these are the firms that usually also serve the most vulnerable customers. These are the firms that have brought innovation, competition, and allowed to reduce the number of underbanked and unbanked people in the UK. Nowadays, we've got only 1 million, which is still a huge amount of people, but we've got only 1 million people who cannot access banking services. This is all done by these smaller firms that offer payment services, right? So
sure,
there is a balance.
But why should victims of fraud pay the cost of helping your members to be there too, as you say, increase the competition?
They're not, because they will get the money back up to £30,000. The average scam pool for individuals is 1,000, 2,000, and for businesses is around 11,000, 12,000. So 30 grand is still a lot of money. When there is more than that needed, we just ask a dispute system, not mandatory. If we do it mandatory, what will happen from October the 7th is that the scammers will target the UK as a market where they see a bonanza of money that's granted, that grows on trees. Money doesn't grow on trees. Where do you think the smaller company is going to take the money from?
But why would they target it? They don't care if people get reimbursed or not. They care about security.
Oh, no, they do, because if there is the principle that everyone gets the money back, they will... average consumers will lower their vigilance.
Well, I don't know that that's true. I think you can hear how awful it is for people.
It's awful. It's
for
awful.
People like Kate. It's an awful experience.
It's absolutely. And I'm sure that she will get her money back.
Ricardo Todera from the Payments Association. Thanks very much. The price of electricity and gas will fall again in July. The regulator, Ofgem, announced the latest cap on energy prices, which will begin on July the 1st. Busy July this year. Sandra Hardiel's been looking at the numbers. Sandra, remind us what this price cap is.
The energy price cap is the maximum amount you can be charged per unit of energy plus the daily standing charge if you're on a standard variable tariff. From July, it will work out at £1,568 a year for a typical household, but that's still over £400 more than it was 3 years ago.
But that's not how much you'll pay necessarily, is it?
No, your energy bill could be lower or higher than this headline figure, depending on the amount of energy you use and how you pay for it. It's not a cap on your bills.
And what will the savings be then for a typical user?
The price cap has fallen from the last quarter by 7%, which takes £122 off the average annual bill. But research from Cornwall Insight predicts that bills will rise by around 12% in October and remain around that level into next year.
So lower for the summer, but then higher for the winter.
Yes, and another thing to highlight is that this latest price cap sets the standing charges at £334 a year. That's the same as last quarter. So whilst energy prices have fallen, standing charges have not followed.
And Sandra, if people listening are struggling to afford their energy bills, what should they do?
The first thing you should do is contact your supplier and let them know you're struggling. They must work with you to agree on a payment plan that's affordable. And you can also ask what schemes or grants are available to help bring your costs down.
Thanks very much, Sandra. Now, the Conservatives say they would retain the cap if they win the election and consult on how to improve price comparison sites. Labour is pledging to bring down energy bills for good and says creating a new firm, Great British Energy, will boost clean power. Now, almost 750,000 people who get tax credits will be getting a letter with a stripe on it over the next few months. It's a black stripe across the top, means that a claim will be automatically renewed. But if there's a red stripe, they will need to contact HMRC to renew their claim or their money will be stopped. This is the last time these stripy letters will be sent because tax credits paid to those on low incomes with dependent children or disabilities mainly are being replaced by universal credit, and by April next year, all tax credits will have ended. There'll be another letter too arriving over the next few months without any stripes that tells people their tax credits will stop anyway and they should claim universal credit instead. It's called migration. It's not automatic. Don't claim and your money stops. Claim too soon or too late and you'll probably get less. Charities like Turn to Us have told Moneybox the system is very confusing. One person who went to the charity for help is Alicia. She has two children and works but needed help to sort her benefits out.
It's just so complicated and intimidating. Every time you need to make any kind of change, you have to either have guidance or know what you're doing, because otherwise you end up scared that you're going to get in trouble. And there's this idea that everyone on benefits is a scrounger or fraudster or whatever, when actually anyone could end up on benefits. So I personally have found it really stressful.
And what did you use the benefit system for, if you don't mind me asking? What were your sort of circumstances around needing to access that?
So it started 18 years ago when I was pregnant with my eldest child. With pregnancy complications, it meant I couldn't work, so I ended up having to claim benefits to pay my bills. Since then, I've been in and out of work with my health. There's just so many different elements. And even under the new system with universal credit, there's still some benefits that aren't under universal credit. Some are. Some things do change when you work, some things don't change when you work, some things go up, some things go down. It's like it's been designed by people who have never claimed benefits because they just don't think about the human side.
Alicia, talking to our reporter Sarah Rogers. Well, with me in the studio is Will Hadwin. He's an independent benefits advisor. Will Hadwin, I have to confess, tax credits make my head spin. Two letters arriving, doing two different things. Tell me about the striped ones first.
Okay, so if you're still on tax credits in this tax year, you will receive a letter, which is your tax credit renewal notice. And that acts as renewal for your claim for 24 to 25 and also gives you a chance to finalise your 23 to 24 award. If it's red, you need to respond. If it's black, you don't have to. But I would encourage you still to check the letter to make sure they've got all your details correct.
And is the stripe obvious? I mean, you can't mistake one.
I would say it is very obvious.
Now, the next letter will be about a different thing altogether, because tax credits are ending next April, aren't they now? It's been brought forward by 4 years.
That's right. Tax credits are ending on the 5th of April, 2025. So what will happen if you haven't already got one is you will receive a migration notice, and that is from the DWP. It actually has both the DWP and HMRC logos on it if you're on tax credits. And that gives you a deadline by which to claim UC. Your tax credits will end either by the deadline or when you claim UC, whichever is sooner. You can't stay on them. It's not an option. You might be able to request extension of the deadline, or in some very extreme circumstances, we shouldn't have been sent a letter, perhaps you could get it cancelled, but those are quite rare.
But this is a letter you must not ignore, because absolutely, you could get less money if you do ignore it or do the wrong thing.
Yeah. If you've received it, you're on tax credits and you receive this letter, the thing to get advice about is when to claim UC. So very broadly, think about when you're paid your tax credits and claim shortly after a payment so that you don't have to struggle to budget over the 5 week wait for UC. If you're expecting a change of circumstances, it's also good to get advice, for example, from Citizens Advice, Help to Claim. But make the claim, because otherwise you will lose out.
Now, 1 million people are being migrated, as I understand it, to universal credit. And as I say, that's been sort of concertinaed into less than a year. But a lot of people who were told to migrate haven't done what you suggested, and they've had their payments stopped, so they're not getting any benefit. Do we know why?
We don't completely know why. There's been a wee bit of research done already by the DWP, and that shows a range of reasons. So, for example, they felt that there wasn't very much money available to them. They perhaps were a little bit confused about what's called the capital threshold. If they have savings of over 16,000, you can still get UC if you are migrating from tax credits and doing so after receiving a letter. We also know that self-employed people are very put off moving to UC because it's a lot of extra admin for them.
Yes, and we've certainly heard complaints from self-employed people. And you mentioned Citizens Advice, the Help to Claim Service, and the Department for Work and Pensions has told us that they promote benefits through campaigns, and they provide funding for that Help to Claim Service from Citizens Advice. Is that the best place to go then? Does it work?
I would say that it does generally work, yeah. Citizens Advice, very dedicated, very knowledgeable, and they have set up this extremely targeted Help to Claim Service, which looks at helping you to get UC right from when you want to think about when to make the claim, making it, and then maintaining it until you get your first award and then checking that first award. So, yeah, I would recommend going to them if you can, but they're obviously going to be under a lot of pressure.
Yeah, indeed they are. I wonder just how many people the funding will pay for, but it's certainly a good thing. Thank you very much, Will, for talking to us.
If I could say just one more thing.
Yes,
is that
briefly.
Don't be confused if you then receive another letter from HMRC because
with a strife or
you've
not.
Got to do in-year finalisation after your tax credits end, and that's for this tax year. So you've got three letters in total.
Right, so don't forget the in-year finalisation. I have a horrible feeling we'll have to be talking about that at some stage. Thank you very much, Will Hadwin. We are getting emails in about the election, about fraud, about pensions. Goodness me. Sadly, I can't read them now. We're running out of time. You've just heard the black stripe version of Moneybox, slightly longer than the red stripe one we broadcast live. But remember, you can always listen live to the live version at midday every Saturday on BBC Radio 4. And don't forget to email us with your concerns about money and how the parties vying for your vote in the UK general election in July might affect it if they win. Moneybox@bbc.co.uk. We do read them all and you might get on the show. Today, the Black Stripe team was Dan Whitworth, Sandra Hardiel, Sarah Rogers and Neil Morrow. Studio producer Craig Henderson. The studio manager who kept the tapes turning was Toby James. Our editor is Jess Quayle. I'm Paul Lewis and this was a BBC News Money and Work production for BBC Sounds. And now, messages from the other side of the Atlantic.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA on BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts. If you dare.
ServiceNow unterstützt Ihre Business-Transformation mit der KI-Plattform. Alle reden über KI, aber die KI ist nur so leistungsfähig wie die Plattform, auf der sie aufbaut. Lassen Sie die KI arbeiten, für alle. Beseitigen Sie Reibung und Frustration Ihrer Mitarbeiter und nutzen Sie das volle Potenzial Ihrer Entwickler. Mit intelligenten Tools für Ihren Service, um Kunden zu begeistern. All das auf einer einzigen Plattform. Deshalb funktioniert die Welt mit ServiceNow. Mehr auf servicenow.de/AI for People.